We've got about 20 minutes left, and what I want to do in this 20 minutes is do some Q&A. There's some in the question box that we'll start with. Heidi and I are going to sort of share this, and it probably means that most of the questions will get shortish answers.
Is there an age you're too young to get married?
Do you want me to...
Have at it.
Yes, I think marriage is a serious and demanding commitment. And if you're not emotionally, personally mature enough to take on that commitment, then you shouldn't get married. See? Now, that's not a sort of step in, because emotional maturity grows at a time. But I think often our perception of ourselves is almost always more generous than reality. and so if you're under 23, 24, for guys 26, and you're not sure whether you're mature enough to take that on, I'd go to a couple of friends who are older than you, who know you reasonably well, who actually see you in some different situations, and ask them for an honest answer. I think that's often the best way forward, because we're not very good at judging ourselves. The other thing you can do, I read recently, is you can test emotional maturity by how you handle disappointment. That is, immaturity usually means that disappointment leads to my world falling apart. I don't cope with that, I get frustrated, I get angry, I get depressed, or whatever. But wait until you have some sort of major disappointment and see how you handle it. One of the ones suggested in the thing I was reading was you're not mature enough to get married if, when you ask a girl or a guy out, you can't handle the rejection. Now, if you're already in a relationship and asking, I want to get married and I'm mature enough, you're not, it's probably not helpful to say, because rejecting it's how I can. That's why I mentioned more that a major disappointment. How can you handle that?
So, will I ask them?
Okay.
There's a couple on dating. So, any advice on dating in Christian circles where asking someone out looks like you're proposing, you're going to propose soon, and where most people know each other?
As far as dating in Christian circles, it does seem like there's a fair bit of pressure sometimes, and and I'm not sure that that's just here. I know that's true in the States as well, but it does seem like there's some pressure. Somebody says, oh, we're dating, that means that we're going to get married next month or something like that. So, but I think one of the things that's really good about Christian and dating is that we do take it more seriously. Like, it does actually matter. But I think one of the things is just, I think we were talking about this with the women a bit. There's going to be pressures from the outside that feel like, oh, it's going to, people are going to perceive this as whatever. I think that's kind of where we need to say, yeah, that's nice that they perceive it that way. Like, and making sure that you're communicating in the dating relationship, that's really where things need to be discussed. But whatever, so-and-so from church down the road thinks about that, who cares? Like, that's kind of on them. And so I think, I think what we might think of was really just for the people that are dating and for their friendship circles and things like that, like talking about some of that, what are some of the pressures that are unhelpful that we put on one another as Christians. So,
that's that one.
Is it a sin to date a non-Christian if dating isn't mentioned in the Bible? How do you come to that?
Is it a sin to date a non-Christian if dating isn't mentioned in the Bible? How do we come to this Christian conclusion? So, I guess two things I build my understanding of it on. That is, one, a Christian shouldn't marry a non-Christian. Secondly, what's dating about is not about exploring marriage. That is, the only other reason I can think of for dating is self indulgent, it's not sin. Now, that may be my limited imagination, but if those two things are right, then dating and knowledge is wrong. That makes sense? To deliberately start a romantic relationship with someone, knowing that I will not marry them, the only reason I can think of you would do that is illegitimate, is sinful. And so that's a non-Christian.
Oh, you can do it so you can evangelize.
You could do that. Can I suggest it's not a good way to do evangelism? And actually, it's a very risky way to do evangelism. The two risks are that you fall in love with them and abandon your Christian faith and they're not converted. That is, you've actually got to recognize how strong romantic and sexual attraction is. You get involved with someone, you get involved with them, and it starts to change you. The second thing is that if, because you go out with them, they become Christian, it's very hard to know what's actually gone on. Because their own judgments all look up at one another. They won't know why they decided to become Christian. He could very well be without then really analysing it properly and being unable to analyse properly, but they've only become Christian because they want to be a relationship now. Which means it's not legitimate, it's not for real, and they will soon drop it, probably after getting married. So don't do what they call it, dating evangelism. I suggest it's not a good way to go forward for either of them. And so if you drop that one out, I still haven't got any good reason to date another Christian. Every consideration in those things is wrong.
And can I just add, I think sometimes when we're thinking about it, we're going to think, oh, but they're close. They're close to becoming a Christian. They're near being it, right? Like, so that kind of gets into people's heads of, oh yeah, if I continue in the relationship or start the dating relationship, that's okay because it's getting them nearer to God. But I think at the point that you know that they're not a Christian, and if the reason behind dating is marriage to have that relationship, well then, yeah, I mean essentially there's this line, and the line is, will I obey God or will I not? Like, that simple stuff. Like, will I obey God and not marry or not decide to enter into a relationship with someone who's not a Christian. Okay? Like, what am I going to obey here or not? Because that answers what's going to happen on the other side of the line too. Like, if perchance they become a Christian, like, you don't know that. You don't control any of the things about their response. You do control whether or not you're going to listen to God in the first place.
If I want to be married, should I just pull a bed right? There's no should, pretty good to me.
It might be unwise. There are two questions I'm burning with passion, which are very close to my heart. There's some ambiguity. Literally, it just says it's better to marry than to burn. It could be burn in hell. It could be burn with passion. That is, just find it really difficult to live with the sexual drive that you have. Now, the presumption I think is wrong. That is, God has different levels of libido, of
of sexual drive. And that's not a bad reason. So I think probably culturally, the more you've got, the better. We all have it, but at different levels. And what you do with it affects how strong it is. So for example, Paul in that situation, he'd be writing for people who have been married before, therefore sexually active. He's talking to widows and widowers. And if you've been sexually active, it is much more difficult to stop. It's harder to turn the tap off than start. And so I think he's thinking that in that situation, it is often quite difficult for people to be sexually inactive once they have been sexually active. That's why he says married couples make love often, because otherwise you'd be tempted to sexual immorality. So I don't think it is true that most of the guys around him so burning with passion that they can raise their life. And if they are, then it's certainly better to marry than to be unholy, and to be sexually immoral. The reason to get married, but it isn't a line that you cross, it's a relation, and that makes it a bit more complex. Which means it's a separation.
Are there ways to use up
sexual energy?
Your sexual energy?
The traditional ways I go for run is to wash out. There's some value in both of those, I think. But they're not the real way. The one of the main things is to not feed your imagination with sex, feed it with other stuff. So there's a bit in Philippians 4, which isn't specifically about it, but Paul says, set your mind on things that are honourable and good. And the idea is that of positive censorship. So if I say to you, don't think about a pink elephant, what are you thinking? Try to imagine a pink elephant. But if I say to you, think about the eagle's wing tomorrow, you're not thinking about pink elephants anymore. Think about eagles. And so positively filling your mind and energy with other things is a helpful strategy. Short term and long term.
There's another question there at 1 Corinthians 7. Do you want to take this from
the floor? Yeah, let's do something with more. We'll find this and then we'll come back to stuff. Is that right, Ryan?
Yeah.
Okay. Questions from the floor?
I obey because I trust that this is true. So
but you're talking at different levels, so.
Tim, the laws, the Bible says don't do it, but when, I'm not sure if this is true, but if there's adultery or if you see it, you can. How does that play out in, like, community separation, divorce?
So there was one here like that too, Jacinda. Does that mean that it's okay to divorce if your partner is unfaithful, even if it says that no one separate or oppose join? Does that mean if you divorce, you can remarry?
I'll try to be quick and summarise what I think Jesus is saying in Matthew 19 and Paul's saying in 1 Corinthians 7. I think what Paul's saying is that if a Christian is married to a Christian and there's difficulties in the marriage, which could include things like domestic violence, separation may be a helpful thing, at least for a while. But separation is different to divorce. Separation is moving apart in order to try and work on reconciliation. But Christians are not to divorce each other. Christians have divorced each other, so I'm not going into what's happening. Just thinking about if you are married, what does God want to do? In 1 Corinthians 7, if you're married to a non-Christian, I presume the situation is you become a Christian since you got married to a non-Christian. Paul says you shouldn't separate from them. But if they separate, if they don't want to be in marriage anymore, let them go. You're not bound. And I presume what he means by not bound is not only you're not bound to go and pound them and hang on to them, but you're not bound by that marriage. It's your proof of remarriage. So if a non-Christian spouse deserts you permanently, then divorce and remarriage is possible. The adultery one is a bit trickier because adultery in itself threatens the oneness that God has made. Because one of you has started another oneness outside that section. Divorce is committed where there is adultery, but it's not essential where there is adultery. That is, I presume that a Christian will desire for the marriage to be repaired if possible. But often the other spouse won't do it. That is, their adultery is an ongoing affair. They won't be faithful to you. And in that situation, divorce is absolutely. Sorry, that's a quick summary of how I understand it. Is that right? Does that answer the other question as well?
Yeah, there was a bit about remarriage.
Yeah, I take it when the Bible talks about divorce, divorce is more than separation. It's the end of the marriage, therefore opening up the possibility of remarriage. And that's how it works, I think, in our, legally, that's how it works in our society. Until you're divorced, you can't get remarried.
And you haven't addressed, is that an option?
So it's only an option where divorce has, it is legitimate in God's life, which is desertion of adultery.
Or
death. Oh, sorry, okay, well, yes, yeah, that's okay.
I think that's just been sometimes enough. My situation is one is you would extend me really focus very well, and then
separated from each other for periods of time.
Or if the inside senses to you is something still feeling human for forever, and you can become a reason why you're different.
But I presume what you're saying is the career is
more different if you separate in the sense of
So I think people have maintained marriages living separately for periods of time, and different cultures it seems to happen more than other cultures. I noticed in Africa quite often men would go away to work because it's survival for the family, and they'd leave spouse, children at home. They might go away for 6 months, 12 months, in our culture we do it much less. I think because we're rich enough not to have to do it, although fly in, fly out is a bit like that. I think Paul's advice in 1 Corinthians 7, I think, is married couples really ought to be living together most of the time. And my observation of cultures where especially the men go away for significant periods is that it really puts marriages under pressure. And many husbands, I'll put it in their words, find it impossible to be faithful when they're away at all. And so I certainly wouldn't recommend people entering marriage planning to be away from each other for significant lengths of time. I think you're making it very hard for each other, and you're putting pressure on the marriage that is almost unsustainable.
Something different. So this is, we talked about the whole designing and marrying differently. But then we talked about sexual gender and the effect of that upbringing. At least to a certain extent. Are we made one way or are we grown one way? Is this linking to different ideas? So I guess at least what I was hearing from you was the designing and looking different. Versus, I actually think the talking about sexual gender being affected by upbringing, that was actually to do more with sexual attractions, not necessarily gender. And I think, yeah, I think in that way, categories might be a bit confused, but yeah, I think God has designed men differently, certainly. I do think our attractions, and I've done a bit of research for just like looking at same-sex attraction in particular, like